The
Donut Box.
The Donut Box.
When it comes to PCOS, one of the biggest struggles we might have is hunger. Constantly feeling hungry, constantly feeling tired, irritable, hangry, and oftentimes binge eating. And usually the first thing we're told to do is to just lose weight. And because of that, you are now restricting your food even more and struggling even more on the cycle of binge eating. For this episode, we will be unboxing a letter sent with that exact concern. So hopefully this will be helpful for you on your journey. My name is Jo Sebastian. I'm a registered nutritionist and dietitian, and welcome to the Donut Box, where we unbox stories and talk about things we usually don't talk about. And today, it's another a glazing letter. So let's unbox it. It's Jo.
And it's Elijah.
And you're listening to
the Donut Box.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode.
Welcome back. It's another week and another podcast.
Today's episode is another a glazing letters, where we read your amazing letters and glaze you with some of our experiences and some of our thoughts and professional opinions to your concerns.
Perfect. What's our topic for today, Jo?
Our topic for today is going to be quite interesting because we are going to be talking a little bit about PCOS/PCOS. Thank you so much for the person who sent this letter. By the way, if you guys want to be part of the next episodes, if you have any health concerns, you want to send us your letters, you can definitely send it to @thedonutboxpod on Instagram so that we can read it for you. And you will stay completely anonymous. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So for people that don't know the meaning of or don't know what PCOS is or PCOS, it's actually an acronym for polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yes, and if you want to learn a little bit more about it, you can also listen to our episode with our OBGYN. That was episode 41. Here's what you need to know about PCOS with Dr. JC Villago Olivares. But we'll touch up a little bit more on that today as well. Okay, here's our letter. I'm a 16-year-old girl who's diagnosed with PCOS just last week. I was advised to go on a diet because I'm overweight, and there's a chance that I'll gain even more weight when I start drinking the medications. The thing is, I always feel hungry. I want to eat something, and most of the time it results to binge eating. What should I do? I'm really having a hard time convincing myself that I should just eat a smaller amount. Do you have any tips on what I should eat instead? Because whenever I feel like eating, I don't want to have to mind my calories all the time. Thank you so much, Bo. Okay, thank you so much for this letter. There's a lot to unpack here because it's a complicated situation with PCOS, you know? There's a lot of things.
I don't, because I don't have experience on this, you guys, so...
Yeah, I mean, I don't have PCOS, but I can definitely resonate with a lot of individuals who do, because of the struggles that they have and face with food. So let's start with a little bit of a background. If you haven't watched the episode 41, PCOS is, again, polycystic ovarian syndrome, and there is usually three criteria. So I'm kind of recapping what Dr. JC said last episode, which is, number one, you have hyperandrogenism, which is the high levels of testosterone in the body for females. Number two, you have your non-ovulation or anovulation, which is you're not ovulating. And number three is cyst in your ovaries. So this is our three criteria.
Like cyst, hey cyst, or I'm just kidding.
Cyst in your ovaries. And the criteria is you have to have two out of the three at least in order for you to be diagnosed with PCOS. Now, they mentioned that they were just recently diagnosed with PCOS and at a young age, at 16, you know?
Is that considered adolescent?
Yeah, I think adolescent is like 13, right?
Yeah, like when they get their menstrual cycle, right? That's around... That's
is that
adolescency? I don't know, I forgot.
Is that what's considered an adolescent? Because I always thought like adolescent just meant teen. So like as soon as you hit the 13, you're like, you're an adolescent.
Yeah, so... Yeah, okay.
Okay, we just... We just double checked. So 10 to 19 is actually your adolescent phase. Okay, the one between childhood and adulthood. Okay, I really thought it was just 13. Like, as soon as you're a teen, you're an adolescent. But apparently, it's a little bit younger than that. Okay, so they were advised to go on a diet because they're overweight, and there's a high chance that they'll gain weight even more when they take their medication. Medications for PCOS or PCOS would often be metformin if you have any blood sugar concerns, and then it would also be your birth control pills. Is metformin something that would possibly cause weight gain?
No. So it's been proven that over like a 2 to 3 year period, if you're on metformin, let's say your diet stays the same, you lose roughly 2 to 3 kilograms over those 2 years. So it helps with weight loss.
You're more likely to lose weight rather than gain weight from metformin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just take note that this is not a medication for weight loss, though. It's not like a weight loss med. I had a comment on TikTok once where I said, like, I'm taking metformin. Is this okay for weight loss? Like, technically, it may help because it will balance your blood sugar levels, but it's not a weight loss drug. It's not like Ozempic, which is also not really a weight loss drug. It's also more focused on your blood sugar levels as well. But as a result, it often allows or helps with weight loss. Okay. Birth control pills. Is that something that could lead to weight gain?
When you first start it, you can possibly experience like a light increase in your weight, like especially like immediately after beginning it. But this is often because of water retention, which in the long run, you'll probably just lose that water. It'll go away and your weight should go back to normal. There hasn't been any studies that show significant increases in weight if you are on birth control for a long period of time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So both of these medications can, for example, not both. Birth control may have an impact on weight, but not necessarily long-term. Metformin also doesn't have a long-term impact on weight gain as well. Okay, so one thing about gaining weight when you have PCOS, Dr. JC in our episode said that we're not really sure if it's the weight that causes the PCOS or if it's the PCOS that causes the weight gain. It's kind of the egg or chicken or the egg situation with that, because it can be both and we're not fully sure.
And even the cause of PCOS is very much unclear. There's a genetic aspect. If you gain weight, is that a risk factor? Like, there's no clear-cut answer as to why PCOS happens. Like, that's the reason. There's only hints and some theories that are known that could be the reasons why.
It's not that, because you're overweight, that's why you have PCOS, right? It's not always automatically that, because at the same time, you could have gained the weight because of your PCOS as well. And that's why I have a lot of clients who come to me and say that, I have PCOS, my doctor said to just lose weight. But now the conundrum is, how am I going to lose weight? Because now I have to change my diet fully, cut out all of these foods. And when that happens, it creates the binge eating and the stress eating and all of these things because the habits don't stick. Now, Dr. JC did tell us that 5 to 10% weight loss can help alleviate symptoms around PCOS, but it really does come down first to the lifestyle changes that you make and if you can sustain those lifestyle changes.
Yeah, that's true. One thing I would say is that since she's 16, how was she diagnosed with PCOS? Like, was she...
Probably went to the doctor.
I wonder how, because when you take an ultrasound and you try to look for PCOS at that young, sometimes women kids in their adolescency, especially within 2 to 3 years of having menarche or getting your period, like sometimes it can show up as large and multicystic, which could be normal for kids. So I wonder if she's still normal and they'll have to like observe, you know, a few more years down the line.
I don't know, but she was diagnosed with PCOS. A lot of women are actually diagnosed with PCOS even younger, 13 or anything else with that. You know, that's why PCOS is actually such a big concern, because one, we're gaining more knowledge about it, but also two, there's so many individuals who are getting diagnosed with PCOS because it's a really big concern for women overall, right? Okay, so, but coming to what Elijah said, yeah, because you are a teen, would weight loss be the automatic or the best solution at this moment in time just because you have PCOS? Usually when you're a teen, we can't recommend you going on a calorie deficit right away or doing all of these weight loss or common weight loss strategies you would do when you're an adult because you're also at your growing phase, right? For me, the biggest step right now is to really assess your habits around food, nutrition, and most importantly, movement and exercise and stress management, because this is the time for you to set that foundation age-wise and health-wise so that we can keep going.
Yep, agreed. I don't think that that would be the best, especially since they haven't reached full maturity yet.
Mm-hmm. And this doesn't mean that your doctor's wrong for telling you to have lost weight, but when it comes to, like, for example, strategy or life or management of that, from my perspective as a dietitian, I wouldn't put you on now a diet to lose weight. I would more focus on your habits and hormonal balance that has to be maintained as much as possible. Dieting at a very young age can be very dangerous long term. And I say this because I started dieting when I was 13. It impacted my period. It made me lose my period even more. And that's already something that those who have PCOS or PCOS are struggling with. They don't have their period. They don't have ovulation. Hormonal imbalance is happening. So now if you're restricting yourself a lot when you're younger, that can lead to even more hormonal imbalances moving forward.
From what I remember, what I learned, first line treatment is always lifestyle modification. These are for adolescents as well, so pediatrics. And yeah, part of it can be weight loss, but that shouldn't be the primary mm-hmm. lifestyle modification, mm-hmm. right?
It should be lifestyle modification that might lead to weight loss, and weight loss
in general.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. right. Exercise is a big key factor. Having a more balanced diet is a key factor. I'm not saying if you have any vices, but if you have any vices, maybe cut those out, like drinking or smoking. I'm not saying you are, but this goes out to...
This is also in general.
In general, right? And in terms of pharmacotherapy, so medicines, first line treatment usually is combined oral contraceptives. So these are your birth control pills, and sometimes you take more than one in order to help balance your hormones mm-hmm. for PCOS.
Yeah, and even Dr. JC said that you're not given pills right away, or depending on the doctor, but generally they wouldn't give the pills right away because you'd start off with lifestyle interventions as much as possible. Now, something that you mentioned in your letter is that you always feel hungry and you always want to eat something. And every time you do eat, it results in a binge. So let's tap into that. Can you run us through, Elijah, why somebody with PCOS might feel hungry all the time?
Well, it could be because maybe they have a higher insulin resistance than somebody without PCOS, and that could lead to hunger pangs and feeling a bit more hungry.
Mm-hmm. What's insulin resistance?
Basically, insulin resistance is when your body produces too much insulin or produces insulin, but your body doesn't react to it.
From the word resistance, like your body is resisting insulin in a sense. Mm-hmm.
And that is typically a symptom of type 2 diabetes or even diabetes. And the main, not symptom, it's a symptom is what you feel, right? It's a complication of diabetes, insulin resistance, and a symptom would be feeling hungry. That's why there's a lot of diabetics who always feel that they're hungry mm-hmm. because of it.
On the cellular-ish level of this is why we tend to feel hungry when you have insulin resistance. So, like mentioned, your body is now struggling with using insulin. And insulin is a hormone that helps you utilize sugar that you consume. So when you have insulin resistance, whenever insulin is pumped out, it's not able to do its job of bringing the sugar to the cells. So even if you are eating a lot of food items that are high in sugar, your body doesn't actually feel fed. So we are eating a lot, but we are still underfed because our body is not actually able to use these food items. So one of the ways that I describe this to my clients is, it's like a train. Okay, so let's imagine you're on a train. The carbohydrates that you're consuming is on that train. And when it goes to the station, the insulin are the people who are directing the people from the train to go where they need to go. When there's way too many people on the train and not enough, let's say, active helpers on the station, then you're not going to be able to direct the people to the right places that they need to go. And because of that, you now have excess sugar in your bloodstream. It can now be peed out even, but essentially your body does not feel fed. And because of that, you will still crave food, specifically high sugar, sweet foods, because that's what your cells need.
It's like the food is there, but it's like,
but it's not there.
Yeah, but it's not going there.
To the right places, yeah. Essentially. Mm-hmm. And so that's why those who have PCOS or those who have diabetes constantly feel that craving for sugar. It's not your fault. It's not a discipline issue where it's just like, I just have a sweet tooth and I'm just constantly craving sweets. It's not just that. It's just that there's something going on in the cellular level.
There's a pathologic reason why you're feeling that. It's not because you are mataka, or it's not because of that, because there is a pathologic reason that is causing you to feel that. And it's not a normal reason.
Yes. And right? You might be thinking now, okay, so if my body can't process sugar, can't process carbs, I should just stop eating it. It doesn't work that way, because if you just stop eating it, your body is still going to be hungry for it in that cellular level. And because of that, you're just going to crave it more. What happens when your cravings build up over time?
It leads you to a binge.
Yes, to overeating it, binge eating it, stressing about it, and then going back into that cycle.
And you do not want to be stuck in that cycle, right, Joe? We don't want to be ever
fun.
Back.
Just kidding.
It was really, really fun.
It was fun.
You know, the torture is fun. Yeah,
I would say torture,
I'm a masochist.
But, a lot of people do say that dieting is kind of like self-harm in a sense, because you're literally harming your body.
It's a very masochistic thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it.
By restricting yourself and all of these things. It's not just in the mental aspect where you feel deprived. It's literally in the physical aspect if you're not eating enough, you know? But that's something else.
If you want to lose weight, if you want to lose fat, there's always a better way to go about it.
But that's for a different topic. So let's go back into the binge eating. So again, you binge eating because of PCOS. It's not your fault. You know, it's not because of you just being weak or anything like that. It really is focused more on that pathological level. So what do I do now?
Yeah. So I think let's go on the medical aspect of this first. Let's say you were given, I don't know, contraceptives, and you're doing lifestyle modifications, and you're still feeling, you know, you're still feeling what you're feeling. I think the next best thing to do is maybe after a month or so, I don't know how long you've been last tested, maybe check your blood sugar levels, check your HbA1c. This is just in my opinion. And if it's heightened and it's not being controlled by COC or for combined oral contraceptives and by lifestyle modification, despite you doing your best that you can, maybe the best is to talk to your doctor to ask what the next step would be. It could be to add metformin. Maybe you do have increased blood sugar levels, or maybe your HbA1c is high. But the best thing to do, in my opinion, in terms of, you know, the medical aspect, would be to check in again with your medical provider and see if there's something else that you could switch. Maybe it's not working and there's something else that you could do for it.
since it's just been a week-ish of you being diagnosed, you know, just continue on with what the doctor said. I think this is the big struggle as well with those who have PCOS or any specific health concern, is that they are given the medication, let's say, and then after a month, they don't follow up with their doctor. And because of that, they just assume, oh, it didn't work, it didn't help me, that's it, this doctor did not do what they needed to do, and then they just, that's it, you know? So it's always important to work with your doctor, and that's why we always say to look for a provider who makes you feel comfortable, who allows you to voice out your opinion, where you feel safe. Because if those instances where, let's say, the medication is not working and you need another medication,
yeah,
you need something else, they will help you with that. But we can't just assume that because you tried one medication it didn't work automatically.
Yeah, it's only been a week, so give it a chance, see how it works, and throughout however long you're gonna observe, start making questions, write down stuff for your doctor that he can answer. Remember, he can't read your mind.
They can't, so yeah.
If you have a question or you have a query or you have a problem, make sure to let them know, because they wouldn't know what the problem is if you don't tell them. So best thing to do over these next month or so, write down your feelings, your thoughts, your questions, and open up to your medical provider about it. And I assure you, they will do something about it, and mm-hmm. they will help you through it. It never hurts to ask.
If you have somebody to talk to, maybe your parents or a sibling, if you feel shy to talk to your provider about this, you can always ask for somebody to help you, to help advocate for you as well, if that's possible.
And the cool thing about having a doctor-patient relationship, if you're too shy to even tell your parents, you have that confidentiality with your physician. So if it's the other way around and you don't want your mom or dad to know, or like you're shy and you want to know first what's happening before you tell your parents, then you shouldn't worry, because you have that confidentiality with the doctor. So whenever you feel that you can finally tell your parents, like, this is what's happening, then you can, right? So mm-hmm. yeah. so don't be afraid.
Okay, so let's go into now the dietary or lifestyle changes that may need to be done to help you with your overall goal of managing PCOS. Now, I do want to emphasize, we are just going to go with general recommendations, and there will always be specific recommendations for you in your case. But because we are limited by the information that we have, we're just going to go with some general recommendations. When it comes to nutrition or lifestyle, our main goal here is hormonal balance, because a lot of things that are happening are hormonal imbalances. Once we find hormonal balance for the level of androgens, for your insulin resistance, the other things can follow. So the first thing is probably going to be, should I now be on a calorie deficit because what I have to do is lose weight, for example? I wouldn't start by attempting a calorie deficit right now, especially since you're a teen, but I'm first going to start with making those initial foundational changes in your health routine. If you're struggling with having cravings and feeling hungry all the time, the first step is to have a regular and consistent meal pattern. Okay. This is going to help with your insulin resistance, to help make the stations not be so full all the time when you're giving them now more regular rides towards where they need to go. Another aspect of this is your appetite is going to be more regulated, because you're not going to feel extreme hunger all the time when you're addressing your early signs of hunger as well.
And you'll have a better meal timing, right? Or like, what do you call it? Where you feel hungry at the time that you want to feel hungry?
Yeah, your appetite regulation.
Yeah, I forgot the term that you use all the time. But yeah, that one.
Okay. But anyways, yeah, that's your appetite regulation, essentially. It will be now in tune with you. That would be something that's going to happen, or you're working towards, essentially. Now, another thing is to focus just on that consistency first, right? Don't focus on trying to get rid of this much food and stop eating this and that. Focus on that meal pattern.
Yeah, you have to make that a habit. It has to become a habit first before making drastic changes.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things I notice for individuals who struggle with PCOS is they always think that they have to be skipping meals for them to manage their PCOS. But what happens? The skipping of meals leads to more irritability, more stress,
more binges.
And now you think it's you just have to try harder, but it's actually because we've been trying so hard to suppress or to push our appetite back that it happens. One of the symptoms of PCOS is actually the irritability, the fatigue, and all of these things that are even heightened more so with restriction or not eating.
Yeah, that's literally the definition of being hangry.
Yeah. Ideally, you would have your first meal within the first 2 hours of waking up. If kaya, the first hour within your waking can be very helpful. It doesn't have to be like breakfast in like the 7 a.m., but around the time that you wake up can be very helpful. And then every 3 to 4 hours after that, we would have our next meal so that we could start regulating.
Perfect.
Okay. Another thing we would also recommend is now the addition of protein and fiber to your meal.
Ooh. You know why, guys? Because those are very satiating for people, right?
Yeah.
Why is protein satiating? Because it's heavier.
No, it's satiating because
it takes longer for the body to digest it. Yeah.
When your stomach detects amino acids or fatty acids, it slows down gastric emptying, which is essentially the emptying of your stomach contents into your intestines. So because it's slowed down, you feel more satiated. But apart from that satisfaction aspect of your meals, for blood sugar balance, it's going to help slow down the release of food into your bloodstream, giving your body more time to manage insulin levels,
right? Yeah, especially, and yeah, and the same thing with fibers, right? It does the exact same thing. At the same time, I think adding lower glycemic index foods can also help.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but back to first, before we get there, when it comes to like protein and fats, that's also one thing that we see with individuals who struggle with insulin resistance is they're always just thinking, oh, I have to stop eating carbs. That's it. Just stop eating carbs. But it's not actually about not eating carbs, but it's about being able to process carbs in the same way as somebody who doesn't have insulin resistance does. And in order for us to get there, if you just cut out carbs, you're not going to make your body learn how to process the food properly. Instead, you can make it easier for your body by spreading out your carbohydrate intake and pairing it with protein, fiber, and some fats to help slow down that release and give your body time to learn how to properly utilize carbohydrates.
Yeah, because by cutting out carb sources, you tend to start craving those carb sources, which then in turn can also lead to a binge, which when you binge can really, really F up that timing and that insulin timing and release, and your blood sugar will spike. Therefore, your body's going to have more trouble. So in the long term, if that keeps happening and you're in that cycle, the longer you're going to have those complications.
Another thing that we look at, like Elijah mentioned, is the low glycemic index foods, right? So your glycemic index is essentially a measure of how fast your body is going to increase your blood sugar levels and decrease it after consumption of carbohydrates. A higher glycemic index means it's faster at the bringing up and down your blood sugar. Lower glycemic index means it's slower at that. 55 being kind of the middle ground, where if it's higher than 55, it's usually considered to be high in that sense. But there is a difference between glycemic index and glycemic load.
Whoa, what's that?
So your glycemic index measures how a carbohydrate specifically will increase and decrease your blood sugar levels, right? Glycemic load measures how a meal will change your blood sugar levels. So it's not the carb on its own, but it's the carb timing paired with whatever food it has now. So for example, yes, 2 pieces of bread is going to increase your blood sugar, But now two pieces of bread with an egg and with a fruit is going to increase your blood sugar slower. That's the difference between your glycemic load and your glycemic index.
Is it better to like say that glycemic index is for like individual meals or individual foods, while glycemic load is like the overall quality of like how fast or how slow you'll reach, you know, that in a meal, right? Is that it? Like they're similar, but one is more individualistic and one is like a bigger picture.
Yeah, definitely glycemic load is something we look at more, because when you're only focused on glycemic index being the specific food items, you're not going to be considering how other food items impact the meal as well. So you might be now like, oh, I'm never going to eat white rice because white rice has a high glycemic index. But actually, you're not eating that much white rice maybe.
Yeah.
Or when you're pairing it with other foods, it's actually very different. I'll give you an example. Watermelon. Watermelon has a high glycemic index.
What?
But when you have it in your meal, in the glycemic load is actually pretty small because it's high in water.
What if you eat foods and turn it into a meal and they all have low glycemic index?
Well, yeah, like, but that still considers your glycemic load.
But in return, it'll be a low glycemic load, or no, not necessarily.
It depends on the amount. So that's also where like the amount kind of matters, because you have to know that when it comes to the glycemic index of a food, they're measuring a specific amount of carbohydrates of that food and how fast it will raise your blood sugar levels. But you're not always going to be eating the amount that is measured in the glycemic index.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's why we don't always go straight into, oh, just change the carbohydrates that you're eating. Because what if that is what's accessible to you at the moment? What we can do first is shift the other food items in your meal. And then later on, we can focus on the type of carbohydrates, if ever, because then that will help tweak the other details, if ever. So they mentioned here, I'm really having a hard time convincing myself that I should eat less than the amount I usually consume. Do you have any tips on what I should do instead so that I feel like I can eat what I want without minding the calories? So something that you have to take note of is you don't have to automatically lessen your food intake, right? Because that can just make it a lot stressful for you, especially if you have a history of dieting. If you're just starting out with dieting and now this is going to impact you long term. Like we mentioned a while ago, what would be best is to now focus on switching out or improving your overall meal qualities to help keep that satiation. Later on in the future, when you have your foundation set, your meal timing is good, your glycemic load is better, then you can now adjust your meal portions because you already feel quite satisfied. That's probably one of the big struggles that a lot of people think, is that just because they're told to lose weight, they now just remove all of their food intake. They now just lessen all of their food, which then impacts us in the long term.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest pitfalls about healthcare in terms of weight loss as a lifestyle modification, is that when you hear it from a doctor that you have to lose weight, you start making drastic changes. And I think that was the biggest thing for me, because I've always been on the heavy side growing up and even now. But every time that I was told like, oh, you have to lose weight because sugar or you're becoming, your BMI is high, you're becoming obese or whatever, I would always end up going to drastic measures, like from eating one cup of rice to having no cups of rice, to completely taking out all the snacks in the house or whatever. And it would work like a month or two. And then that's
but
when
it really
became,
work.
It,
you know,
but
yeah.
It didn't. Mm-hmm. It didn't work at all. Mm-hmm. And like what Joe said, the most, I think, efficient and effective way to actually help when it comes to lifestyle modification is to start working on small habits that lead up overall the bigger picture into a bigger habit. You know, you start, because when you say lifestyle, you're changing your life, right? You're changing how you act, you and you not how you act, how you do things in your life in order to become healthier or to become healthier. And when you think of like when you think of getting healthier, I don't think drastic should be the word that comes to your mind.
I think the reason why drastic comes into our mind is usually because when we do go to a doctor, we're automatically given a deadline. Okay, I'll see you in 6 months. You should have lost this much weight by then. And boom, automatically it's like, oh gosh, I have to do the most at this moment. I have to do all of these changes. And I think that's really just a big part of the healthcare system that needs to be adjusted as well, is because we put so much pressure on deadlines.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are conditions that need drastic measures. But when it's a chronic disease that needs lifestyle modifications, going straight into drastic measures can lead into more problems in the future. So we have to really look at this very holistically and safely and realistically.
Yeah, because it makes it harder for you to actually stick to those changes. So let's say you go to a doctor and be like, okay, you have diabetes type 2, see me in 6 months. You should have dropped, let's say, 20 pounds by then or more than that, something like that. Now you do everything you can. You are going on the diets, you are working out, all these things. You meet the doctor in 6 months, your blood sugar is better, your weight is better. Okay, you're good, great. Now, after those 6 months, let's say you don't have a deadline anymore. Now you're going backwards in all of these habits because that deadline has been met. But because the habits that you had made didn't stick, it's now all coming down. And you're going back to your old habits. It's not something that you were able to sustain because it wasn't fun, it wasn't enjoyable, it was hard, it was so different. You didn't hang out with your friends, you didn't eat your favorite foods. So what is the point of that? You know, what was the point of that whole thing?
Versus like if they said, okay, 6 months, and you're like, okay, I'm not gonna rush it. First 3 months, you get your meal timing down, you're getting, you're doing some daily exercise, maybe walking, you're adding more fruits, veggies, proteins, and those first 3 months, and you finally like, oh yeah, I feel good. Okay, maybe these next 3 months I'll work on a slight deficit. And so when you get to that 6 months in your next appointment, maybe you lost only 10 pounds, maybe only 5 pounds, but you realize, oh, there's improvements in my blood tests. Your doctor's not gonna be like, oh, you failed. Your doctor's not gonna say that.
Depends on the doctor.
Depends on the doctor. Yeah, but majority of the time, your doctor's not gonna be like, you're a failure. No, they're gonna do their best to keep going. And they're like, oh, good job. Now let's keep these habits going. I feel like we also need the training part and the healthcare guy is to be more mindful of what we say and to make it clear that like these deadlines don't mean that you're gonna fail, right? So it just means that you made better habits, you're able to get better results, and it's easier for you to keep these lifestyle changes a part of your life. So after that second appointment, you just continue what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's really the biggest reason why a lot of people actually fear going to the doctor as well. It's because they're afraid that they haven't done enough. They haven't done what they needed to do. But that's also because these habits were just not sticking. And that's why it's so, so important that we start emphasizing that health is affected by so many things and that it has to be taken seriously, but slowly as well. And just because you're taking it slow doesn't mean you're not taking it seriously.
I like that. I like that. Just because you're taking it slow, it doesn't mean that you aren't taking it seriously. Wow. Relationship yarn. Wow.
Put on a shirt. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so back to the letter sender. So everything that we're saying here is we just want you not to focus so much on your weight, because PCOS is affected by so, so, so many things going on in your body. And the very first and most important step is to understand what your body is going through. And because you may have insulin resistance, because there are hormonal imbalances happening, the first step is to balance those hormones by giving yourself a healthy foundation. Now, in terms of your cravings, in terms of the hunger that you feel, focus first on your meal timing. Focus on adding more protein, fiber, and fats. Focus on being consistent with this, as they will really be big factors in allowing you to sustain everything that you're doing right now. One thing to add as well, stress plays a very, very big role in our hormonal imbalance. So that's something to take a look at. Any other thoughts or things you want to say?
And on my side, I guess the tips that I would want you to remember would be is to make sure to always ask your healthcare provider for clarifications, for questions, for problems that you have on your mind, because they are there to help you with any situation that comes up. So don't be afraid.
Okay, thank you so much for sending that letter, and for anyone else again who wants to be part of the next episode or has any health concerns they want addressed, just send it to the Donut Box Pod and we'll do our best to answer your questions.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, guys. See you next week.
And that is the end of the episode. Thank you so much again for tuning in and for sending in your letters. If you want to be part of the next episode, don't forget to follow at the Donut Box Pod on Instagram or follow us here as well for the next one. You can also follow me at It's Joe Sebastian on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Threads, and X if you want to keep in touch, or follow at healwithjoe.rnd on Instagram for more nutrition things. The Donut Box is an Anima Podcast podcast. Don't forget to follow them as well for the latest pods. Till the next episode, don't forget, you always deserve to eat.